Happy Friday. Welcome back to Locked On Spurs on the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Jeff Garcia of the Spurs Zone, News 4 San Antonio and Fox29SanAntonio.com. The NBA season is still on hold as the world battles the COVID-19 virus. And, you know, there may not be much to talk about by way of X's and O's and games, obviously, but there are still some fun topics to discuss about among you, me, my guests, and pretty much all Spurs fans across the globe. And that's what we're going to do today. A couple of fun topics here. Basically, what happens if the NBA season resumes and the NBA tells the Spurs, hey, you guys are in, but you wanted that 8th seed. There's something you're going to have to do first in order to get that. LeBron James was a guest on former Spur, Richard Jefferson's podcast, and they bantered about what they can do, or at least their idea, of how the Spurs and the rest of the field that was competing for the 8th seed can battle it out. Also on the show, you know I am a big nerd, and Marvel has a series called What If? But we're going to play a game called What If Spurs Edition. And if there's one moment in Spurs history you can change or alter, what would it be? So who's going to help me with that? Well, when it comes to Marvel, I got to go to the main man himself. That is James Pledger, co-host of Saturday Morning Hangover. James, welcome back to Locked On Spurs. And by the way, of course, I would have you on. We're going to play a Marvel game called What If.
Obviously, because that series is going to delve into a bunch of what ifs, like what if Peggy Carter got the serum instead of Captain America? What if, you know, Captain America was Hydra? Like, they're going to delve into a whole bunch of what if alternate realities in the Marvel Universe during that short little series on Disney Plus they're going to release, which is just, it's fun to go down the rabbit hole sometimes. And when there's nothing else to do, you might as well dive down the rabbit hole, right?
Well, we're going to dive into it. And before we recorded, James and I already picked our two moments in Spurs history that we're going to open that door and dive deep into that rabbit hole. But that's later on the show. But, you know, James, before we got to talking right here on Locked On Spurs, you played the audio of LeBron and RJ talking about what could happen if the San Antonio Spurs season, well, if the NBA season resumes and how that AC is going to be sorted out. At last check before the hiatus, the Spurs had beaten Dallas. They were 5-5 in the last 10. Mathematically, they were still in it as far as making the postseason, but there was some competition, the Pelicans, the Kings, the Blazers, the Grizzlies, et cetera, et cetera. What did you learn? What did you hear? What was the proposal on RJ's podcast?
Well, they talked about just how it's going to happen. And with both conferences, you know, the seeds are pretty much almost not locked in, but like the top teams, you know who they are. And the only thing that's really up for debate is the 8th seed in each conference. So what if you come back to get people's legs under them? The other teams play kind of games against each other, whether it's the lower or the higher teams to kind of determine the playoff seeds. But you take like 8, 9, 10, 11, or 12 in each conference. You try and take four teams from each conference, and they all played each other in sort of a round robin or even a three-game tournament against, you know, 8 versus 11 and 9 versus 10. And each plays three games, a series. The winners advance, play a three-game series against each other to determine who gets that 8th seed. I don't know if I could formulate a better way for the Spurs to make up those games to keep this playoff streak alive. And it's very interesting when you think about it and how that could possibly work out to the Spurs' benefit in a way.
It really could. It will not only give them a fair chance at keeping that streak alive and breaking the NBA record of the consecutive playoff appearances, but it'll also allow them to, as you mentioned, have that shot to make that 8th seed. Look, they were not out of it mathematically. They needed help. Yes, they did. But you can't get bigger help than this, than them completely being able to control their own destiny. Before the hiatus, James, they were relying on teams. You know, how many times did we see it, you know, nightly, you know, oh, look, the Pelicans lost. Oh, look, the Kings lost. Oh, Memphis is on a losing streak. that needed to happen for the Spurs to make the postseason. Now that it's almost like a clean slate. And the way they were playing, James, beating Dallas right before the hiatus, do you think this could be their best shot at it, and why?
I think it could be their best shot at it, and I'll tell you why. With all this time off, players not really being able to get in the gym, everybody's kind of on their own little hiatus. LeBron's in his own mansion. Like, nobody's able to really interact with one another. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some players aren't as disciplined as others and may end up falling out of shape. You think about, A, the youth of the Spurs, and then B, the youth being able to kind of take the time off, and the older mm-hmm. players would be affected more by not being able to work out than the younger players would in terms of conditioning. And then mm-hmm. B, on top of that, coaching. Like, yeah. If all things are the same, coaching is going to be the great equalizer in a weird situation like this, where everybody's coming back almost to kind of start the season over, it would feel like. Well, coaching, would you not rather have a better coach on your sidelines to guide you through this than a mm-hmm. Greg Popovich?
I completely agree. Pop will be able to get the best out of this team in a short period, because I believe the proposal, you know, from LeBron and RJ in the show was a three-game series or a five-game series, the old school
one? It was two three-game series. Determine the winner of the eight-game series or to that effect. You know, you'd have 6 to 7 games that would determine mm-hmm. who's going to advance. So you may end up taking the two winners, and then the loser comes back through in a round robin, and then it's a kind of double elimination at the end. Mm-hmm. But there's multiple ways you can go, and there's the opportunity to have a chance for the Spurs to continue that playoff streak if that's the case. Now, if they go about shortening the end of the regular season, or if they play out the regular season as constituted, making up, what were they, 4-5 games back?
They were about 4-5 games back, yep.
I mean, that's a lot to make up in a short period of time when you're talking about the end of the regular season.
And look, if you
especially if they shorten it at all, it becomes almost impossible.
Right. If they shorten it all, it's the good luck Spurs. You know, it's almost slim to none. They're going to make the postseason. But if they go with a player proposal like the James and RJ did, that allows the Spurs, A, as you mentioned, the coaching factor, and B, and I think this is really key too, is that they've had time to recover. Jakob Poeltl, he was banged. He was banged up a lot. He was out. He's MCL strain. He's likely mm-hmm. to be primed and ready as we speak. Same thing for Murray. Murray was dinged up too. Walker got dinged up. And let's face it, you know, when it comes to a mileage on this team, there's two guys that get the most miles, and that's LMA and DeMar DeRozan. Rudy Gay, he's been sharing a little moment of his time in quarantine, and he is still working out. Bellinelli the same way. You know, Murray exactly the same thing. My point is the players are still going to be in shape. But how much of a factor is the game shape going to be? How much is the rust going to be?
There's a difference between being in shape and being in basketball shape.
And I think that could also be another equalizer too, because if the field is going to be coming off the quarantine, then everybody's going to be having the rust to shake off, James.
Exactly. And that's going to be the most difficult part. So that's where coaching could be a heavy deciding factor once we get back into playing games.
Yeah, and then you have to look at just the maturity level of this. Look, Memphis, they're a very, very young team. And that type of pressure cooker situation could get to them. Same thing for the Pelicans. You know, Zion, you know, hey, Zion, Mr. 19-year-old, you have to beat a Spurs team that's led by that guy on the sidelines, Popovich, and a group of guys that, yeah, they are young, but they got some veterans on that team. Good luck, Lonzo Ball, you know, Brandon Ingram, Ja Morant, Brandon Clark, you know.
And we also
Kings,
talk about the difference in how much it'll be a mental adjustment for the entire league, most of these players, to possibly have to play these games in empty arenas and not having crowds to feed off of.
Do you really think that's going to be a factor for this, for the teams, just the crowd? Because you always hear the stories, and you know, or players talk about, oh, how they wish it was back in the day, you know, just them battling out in a, on a court. Part of me thinks that LeBron might enjoy that.
He's very anti no fans in the stands.
Oh, he is. Okay. I thought he would be pro gimme fans in the stands.
No, LeBron wants the fans in the
stands. Oh, he wants them in the, okay, I understand. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, he's very pro get the fans in the stands. He's very anti no fans in the stands. He wants them there because you feed off the crowd's energy, and even if it's an away game against an away crowd, like silencing that home team's crowd, there's just this feeling that you feed off of. And I think a lot of players, because how many players have played in kind of empty gyms, and when it does it feel like that intensity needs to be ratcheted up when it's not, when there's nothing to feed off of, or does it just feel like practice at that point? And at that point, what better scenario than a coach who makes practice mean so much to where your playing time basically is dictated upon it, that you're more prepared to play in a no fan scenario than what Pop does with his players in the Spurs.
Yeah. And you got to look at this too. You know, if we're going to be leaning on what the Spurs were doing before the hiatus, maybe their record, you know, wasn't the greatest, and maybe, yeah, they were inconsistent, but there was one thing they were consistent about, and that is bench production. The Spurs bench was tops in the league when it comes to points, when it comes to points in the paint, fast break points. That second unit was really key for the Spurs. And yeah, you know, the record wasn't that great, but you knew when that second unit came in, James, they're at least going to have this team somewhat in contention for pulling out a W. If you look at their plus minus, it really wasn't terrible before the break. I mean, they weren't getting throttled. They were keeping games close, and I think the bench had a lot to do with that, James.
Yeah, that's one of the I guess, positives you could say about a 5-5 record going into the break is that it wasn't like early in the season where, you know, they were just getting blown out by certain teams, or even then it was just small lapses like it's been all season long. Mid-game lapses that either keep a blowout from being close or keep a blowout from a win. They end up closing the gap and taking it from the Spurs, or the Spurs close the gap and end up either winning or losing close. And they never fully got blown out in any of those games. And so it's just, it's going to be different. It's going to be weird, but I completely disagree with LeBron on Richard Jefferson's Road Trip and podcast, where he was like, you know, it's not basketball if there's not fans in the stands. Well, this is beyond all of that, because at this point you have a chance to do something even without fans, to give fans something, because with everybody stuck at home, like, sports has always been all of our kind of disconnect from the real world, our ability to just kind of let the real world melt away and fully embrace ourselves in something else. Now, if there's no fans in the stands, it doesn't matter, because these people are going to be at home, they're going to be tuned in, they're going to be watching, and it's going to give America the sense that everything's going to be okay again. Like, things are starting to get back to normal. It's not yet, but there it's on the upward trajectory of normalcy. Like, the sports, especially basketball, would give us the illusion when we're watching on TV that we can see the light at the end of the tunnel finally of this very scary and difficult time that everybody's having to go through with this economic crisis and that this pandemic is causing, and the ability to just kind of forget about people that have either lost their jobs or their jobs have closed down and they've been sent home without pay, and the worries about what they're going to do with their life. It would give people the opportunity to just kind of let it all go for a little bit, to cheer on whoever they want to cheer on, whether it's the Spurs or the Lakers or the Celtics or the Rockets or the Mavericks, like whoever, or just to even just watch something else. It doesn't even have to be a Spurs game, just to have something on to where you can get invested again and just forget about everything.
Well, here's the thing too. It'll also give fans a quick injection of life in the sense of a tournament. Now we're just using the Spurs fan base and here on Locked On Spurs, obviously, but what better way to come out of that hiatus than, oh, by the way, Spurs fans, in about 3 to 4 days, there's going to be a tournament all for everything, for all the marbles, for the eighth seed. Okay.
Tickets go on sale. Especially thinking day. About the fact that the tournament's been canceled. It kind of filled that void too. The NCAA tournament was canceled, so the brackets and all that stuff that everybody usually gets psyched up about and watching those, like, it would give kind of that element to the end of the season. So it might kind of satiate both needs.
Yeah, and you know, if it's a short, quick burst rounds, best of three, I think you go for it. I think you do it every other day. I think you don't put a delay. You don't put, you know, what they normally would do in a normal NBA season or postseason, you know, days between games. No, it'll be rapid fire. It'll be able to fill that void right away. You get Spurs, we're making this up, Spurs versus Pelicans in this opening round of this 8-seed tournament. Then the next day, you know, Memphis versus Sacramento. Then we go back to Pelicans Spurs. I mean, game twos will now become, you know, their game seven feel of it immediately. And yeah, I mean, I think this tournament, obviously, you know, Adam Silver have the final say, but if this fictitious tournament that RJ and LeBron were talking about were to happen, then I think Spurs fans will be down, because then at no point can they come back and say, you know, Spurs fans, I mean, NBA, you didn't give the Spurs a fair shake. You come out of a hiatus and you just lopped off 5-6 games from their remaining schedule of 19 games. That's not fair. Now you have a fair playing ground, James.
You get a fair playing ground, and I think it would amp up the end of the regular season. Like, people would be dialed in because there would be so much importance placed on every game. Like, the regular season, if it returns, we'll be watching, but how much? And probably a lot, but like, how invested would you be? Because the stakes aren't going to be that in every single game down the stretch. But if they were, it becomes that much more enticing and has a feel to it to where you're on the edge of your seat, whether you're a fan or not. Like, wow, this game means something, instead of, you know, Golden State versus Minnesota in May, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
To where it's on just to kind of let me unplug.
Yeah, and how would the seedings, I don't know if they discussed their seedings. It would, you know, San Antonio was what, 12th? I believe, God, it feels like forever. I think they were the 12th seed before the break. So it would just simply be that 8 versus 12, like you flip it, like one would play 8, but in this case, 8 would play 12.
Well, as I pull up the standings and take a look, San Antonio, yeah, they were 12th, a half game behind Sacramento and New Orleans and Portland.
Jeez, so that's tight.
That's a very tight tournament, but it's also that thing where you look at it, there's four teams within the eight seed, all within a half game of one another or tied with one another. That's
insane.
Incredible.
Yeah, it is. And the stakes would be high. I mean, so high. You can't tell me that Zion would have wanted to make the postseason, you know, or the NBA would have wanted to see Zion make the postseason. I mean, he's blockbuster. You know, he brings in views. So that there's stakes right there. You're off the court. You know, you look at Ja Morant, you know, electric player, you know, Brandon Clark, great player. You know, that Memphis team is young and hungry, you know, to see them, see what they can do under a pressure cooker situation like that so soon. And then it would be, you know, the Spurs make the postseason, which, by the way, I don't know, I'm pretty sure you saw this, you know, Rudy Gay telling The Athletic that the Spurs were going to go on a win streak right before the hiatus, and they were going to make the postseason regardless of the halt on the NBA season. You know, okay, fine, Rudy, you know, you talk the talk. Let's see it. You know, let's see if this team can make it. So it's just, you know, what better way to welcome back the NBA season if it does resume, then bam, the eight seed tournament. And I think that would be revolutionary in the sense it could be the spark for other type of in-game tournaments for the future of the NBA.
Well, you think about it, Adam Silver's already discussed the possibility of like mid-season tournaments.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. I meant to say mid-season, excuse me. But yeah, mid-season tournaments. And the NBA and its properties, you know, they've done it already. You know, I know it's not real basketball, but on the virtual basketball world, the NBA 2K League, they have a couple of in-season tournaments to determine, you know, who gets to buy, you know, who will make that final spot. And at least on that platform, it's very, it's very exciting. I think the same thing could be happened on the NBA court. You know, hey, wow, look, during that coronavirus season that got, you know, that it hit the, you know, the Spurs and the rest of the field, we had this eight seed tournament and it was awesome. Hey, NBA Players Association and Board of Governors, Adam Silver, let's do it again. And I think fans would be okay with it.
And it would be so great to have it, but I still keep going back to LeBron's thoughts and how short-sighted they are about no fans in the stands. And if you think about it, of the majority of NBA fans that consume the product, such a small minority of them are the ones that actually are at the game. So LeBron's talking about not wanting to play in front of stadiums without fans. He's depriving the majority of the basis of the fandom. When he says something like that, he's not taking into account the people that can't actually go to the games or never can afford to go to the games or for whatever reason don't go to the games, the teams that are out of markets that can't watch the games live. Like, you're talking about 20,000 people per arena, 25 to 30,000 people per arena of 30 teams. When, you know, millions upon billions consume the product on TV.
The reality is this too, James, is that that is a possibility. You know, Adam Silver can say tomorrow, you know, hey, we're back, but by the way, they're going to be fanless. And that could happen. You know, if the NBA feels confident that they can come back sooner than later, and maybe the players or the, you know, the staff or team staff, I say, you know what, that's cool, Adam, but we don't feel really secure if this coronavirus is done or for it, but let's limit fans. I mean, that could happen, James.
Yeah, and I the only concern I could see with no fans is just the player safety in general in terms of the virus is still a thing. So why are we exposing ourselves as players?
Right.
And that way, you know, because if one person on the court gets it or has it, then it could just break out over the entire league.
Yeah. And that's the last thing the NBA would need. And not even just from the health side, which is way more important. But, you know, I talk about a PR nightmare, you know, that just be the worst thing that could happen, you know. For, you know, hey, NBA, you led the way in shutting it down for the rest of the sports world when the virus was just in its infancy and beginning to bloom. Now, look, you rushed back and here we are. And yeah, so I think this is going to be a delicate thing that the NBA and Silver are going to have to really look at as far as coming back. Now, I believe, James, the last report was July. I think you got pushed back a little bit more to July. But, you know, that's a lot of time.
Mark Cuban was on Cavuto Coast to Coast earlier this week and talked about June 1st being, and he and Cuban said I'd take the under.
Okay, well there you go.
I mean, so there's a possibility it could return before June.
Yeah, and but I think if they do come back, James, it's going to have to be baby steps. Because you come back full force, it would just take that one player. Fan to spark this all over again,
Third you know. And,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but regardless, basketball, you know, will be back eventually. But right now is just a period where everybody's going to have to just tough it out. You know, it is what it is. You know, you're looking at New York State. You know, it's out of control. You know, hospital beds are full. You know, they're shut down. Looking at Major League Baseball, it should have started yesterday, James. It didn't. You know, this is just the way it is right now, but it will be back. But if it does come back, talk about coming back with a bang. Spurs, the field, the battle for the eighth seed. You can't get more hype than that,
tournament
James.
Style.
Tournament style. All right. Well, those are our thoughts about a, you know, a player proposed eighth seed tournament coming back. But we're going to shift gears now, and we're going to be playing a game of what if. And I think you're going to like our picks. I think James, I know what he's going to talk about, and he knows what I'm going to be talking about. So stick around and find out what we're going to be changing and getting into our DeLorean. James, got to make sure the flux capacitor is ready to go. So
tweet us what you'd change.
What's that?
I said, and tweet us what you'd change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Please tell us what you would change when we get back. We're back, and I'm joined by James Pleasure. He is the co-host of the Saturday Morning Hangover you can listen to on ESPN Radio out there in San Antonio, 1250 on your AM radio dial or online, espnsa.com. James, you and I, we love us some Marvel. And you introduced it in the beginning, you know, the scene, the setup, Marvel's what, where they take these hypothetical situations that could have changed the entire universe, where you mentioned maybe Captain America isn't Steve Rogers. You know, what if Hulk didn't get the gamma rays and they went to, you know, somebody else? We're going to do the exact same thing right here. So, James, if you can play Marvel's What If Spurs edition, what would be the one moment in Spurs franchise history you would change and why?
Well, I'd welcome to listen to anybody that wants to throw their what if scenario of one outcome or game or moment in any Spurs one game throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
You can tweet at me. I am Pledger. Of course, you at Jeff G Spurs Zone. There were a couple. I've had a lot of people tell me that it's easy. It's game six. It's the Ray Allen shot. Right. That doesn't go down. The Spurs, you know, 10 gets that rebound. The Spurs win their seventh title. Well, I don't think that's necessarily true in terms of, yes, they win that title. But the following year, that title run was predicated on the revenge factor of losing that game. I don't know if they win the following year's title if not for that game and that loss and the feeling they had that whole off season that motivated them to go on that run the following year and playing that beautiful game of basketball at almost a perfect level, it felt like, to where they just ran through the season, the postseason, and the Heat.
Yeah. Yeah, they decimated the field. Yeah, they just did the field. I don't think – did anybody give him run? Was that the year that Dallas had him in the opening round?
But that was like the only series that ended up giving them any trouble at all. And right. It just felt almost like destiny in a sense, because they were so fueled by what had happened the season before. And Greg Popovich and the players, Tim and Tony and Monty, they all talked about, you know – yes, we still think about it. It's driving us this year.
Mm-hmm.
Without that drive from that feeling, I'm not sure they win that title the following year. So yeah. Instead of that, I go with one that altered, I believe, the entirety of the Spurs organization to where we are today.
Hit me with that.
That would be the Zaza game.
Yeah, I knew it.
I mean, if not for Kawhi landing on Zaza's foot, which led to the injuries, which led to the tendinopathy, which led to the misdiagnosis and the distrust and everything that got sowed from there. And then Tony Parker talking about his injury being 100 times worse and everything else that went on following that moment in Spurs history. Not only did they have the Golden State Warriors, who were the defending champs and the you know, the best team in basketball and had an argument for one of the best teams ever assembled. They had them down 25 at home when that happened. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. They were routing Golden State. Kawhi was a monster. He was fully asserting himself into superstardom. And that, everything went sideways from that exact moment.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That moment in Spurs franchise history changed the present course that all the Spurs fans are riding right now. It's just not a fun time. It allowed not only for the Spurs to be in the spotlight in the negative way, because you had never seen that coming out of San Antonio. Rarely did you. I mean, the closest I can think of is Dennis Rodman wanting to get out, or maybe Steven Jackson. But never to the level of Kawhi Leonard sneaking away reportedly in New York City, you know, for rehab. You know,
he was social distancing. He was just ahead of his time.
Big time. Yeah, he was very social distancing before it was a thing. But then you had the infamous Tony Parker. My injuries was 100 times worse than Kawhi's, and that awkward team photo shoot where Kawhi was again practicing social distancing during that photo shoot, and it just set this team back. It really did. You're seeing it. I'm seeing it. The listeners are seeing what the ripple effects are of Kawhi Leonard leaving. Because let's face it, James, this team, you can't look at this roster as presently constructed and say, you know what, this guy is franchise. He was, and his name was Kawhi Leonard, but he forced himself out. As currently constructed, I don't see a franchise-type player. And I frankly, James, I think it's going to be quite a while before the Spurs get that cornerstone piece again.
It could be, because it's hard to find that, like where they found Kawhi that late in the draft, where they found a Tony, mm-hmm. where they found a Manu. Usually, it's where you find a Tim. Mm-hmm. And there's only one way to get to that spot. The Spurs aren't in that spot.
They're not good enough to not be that. They'll get themselves a good, solid player in the draft. And by the way, a very weak draft. And by the way, a draft that is going to be very unknown because there's no March Madness. We're not going to know all these kids are playing. So the Spurs they're going to have themselves a time as far as scouting and finding a player that'll fit in. And I'm sure they will. And they're one of the best in the business. But they're not going to get a Tim Duncan. That's for sure. They're not going to get another Kawhi. That's for sure. Even Popovich admitted it before Kawhi forced himself out, saying that nobody knew that he was going to be this type of player. And he just, boy, did he ascend fast. So that is a great pick. Yeah, I think that, you know, go back in time, you know, tell Doc Brown, said it before the Sanford, Oakland, California, we're going to go and change the future. And tell Pop, hey, pull out Kawhi for the next play. Who was on that? Parker, why don't you just slide under Zsa instead of the other way around? You know, somebody, you know, do something. Yeah, I think that'd be great. And who knows? Which leads me to this question for you, James. Even if Zsa Pachulia did not undercut Kawhi, do you think he would still be a San Antonio Spur? You don't think he would still find a way to get himself home to California?
Maybe. But it wouldn't have been as messy, and you probably would have been able to recoup more than what you ended up recouping for him. Because you're basically, you had to trade a player who hadn't been playing, that nobody knew exactly what his health was, and there were no guarantees on the end of his deal.
Yeah.
And that he would sign and re-sign with you. So with all that being said, there's the possibility, if he's still healthy and playing, you can trade them, but everybody knows what they're getting at that point. And when everybody knows what they're getting and that his health is not in question, that you're able to get more than what you ended up actually getting for him.
I think he would have left San Antonio, but I think he would have just played out his contract. I think that's what would have happened. I think that last final season, he would have been, hey,
and if that's the case, maybe the Spurs have another title or two.
Right. Exactly. Well, yeah, you took the thunder right from me. at least the Spurs would have had maybe something from them. But that's my point is I think he was just so hell-bent on getting to California, no matter what. And I think that would have been his route. If Zsa never happened, he would have just simply played out his contract. He would have been quiet about his future with San Antonio. He would have done one of those post-practice media sessions, and somebody would have asked him, hey, you're in your final contract, you know, do you want to be a Spur forever? And he'd do his, yes, of course, sure. And then next thing you know, breaking news over the offseason, you know, Kawhi Leonard is a free agent and he signed with the Clippers or the Lakers. He was just determined to go home, wasn't he, James?
He was, but maybe you get him in a sign-and-trade. Maybe you get something back from him. Maybe you end up with a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander if he really did want to end up going back to Los Angeles. And then you've got at least a nice young block to build around, you know, kind of like Oklahoma City has now, who, if you look at it, they're in the playoffs.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, but there's a part of me still that says that somebody named Uncle Dennis would have gotten in his ear and just told him, be quiet, don't say anything. We're just going to walk. You know, we're just going to walk. We're going to be a free agent, unrestricted free agent, and we're going to walk and screw San Antonio. So part of me think that would have happened. I just think that they'd be that cold-blooded, James, based on everything that report.
It may be, but leaving that amount of money on the table, even in a sign-and-trade possibility, like,
yeah,
the ability to maximize your money, because most NBA players have figured this out. Like, even if I don't want to stay where I'm at, I can say that I don't want to stay, but in a sign-and-trade, I can still maximize my value on the open market on my way out the door, so I don't have to take that hit over the life of my contract.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been totally different. There may have been that title number 6 banner hanging in AT&T Center had he just stayed around, even if it's for another couple of years. I think it would have happened, because the Spurs, they would have dominated the West. It would have been that whole thing again, two teams coming out of the West, and it would have been replaced as of the Lakers. It would have been the Warriors and the Spurs. That would have been the battle for at least a couple more seasons. It would have been fun too. It would have been really, really fun to see those two teams clash for the Western Conference supremacy moving forward. But oh well. As for me, James, I'm gonna go a bit old school, and this was my perhaps shock face. What's that?
This is my shock face.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. Jeff's gonna go old school? No way. one of the earliest heartbreaking moments in most Spurs fans' memories, at least those that are old enough around my age to remember this, and that would be Rod Strickland's no look. Over the head pass to nobody except for a Sean Elliott, who realized he should have been cutting or was trying to cut, missed it, ball sails out, game over. That was heartbreaking. That was a game 7 situation for the Spurs and Blazers. Robinson was at his peak. That team was with a young Sean Elliott, a young Robinson, of course, Rod Strickland and Willie Anderson. That series with the Blazers back in the day was a war. It wasn't a series. It was a damn war. And they were coming out bloodied. There was a picture of Terry Cummings with a busted forehead and blood drooling coming out of him. Same thing for Jerome Kersey. Jerome Kersey gave it to Sean Elliott, but Sean Elliott, you know, hung and died, and he was trying to give it back to him and did the best he could. The Spurs were on the verge, James, the verge, minutes away from making it to the NBA Finals. They were right there. I believe it was the Finals or the semifinals. My point is they were set to advance. And Robinson would have not gotten that stigma, at least that early stigma of he's soft, he can't lead a team by his own. You know,
what
he
year was it again?
Woo, let me remember. That was the early 90s, I believe. Let me look it up real fast here.
Post Memorial Day miracle.
A pre.
So you're talking 93-4, 4-5,
something like that. Yeah. Let me look it up real fast. But
because it was just if it was Portland, and it was in those years, you still would have had to face the Keem's Rockets, who won those two titles, who eviscerated David Robinson.
Well, that it was actually a game 7 in the 1990 West Semis. That's what it was. And it was just a bad pass.
97, you said?
90, no, game 7 in 1990 West.
90, the
West
okay, Semis. Okay, yeah. Okay. I could see that.
So, and I believe the Blazers moved on to play the Pistons. They did the Pistons We're still, you know, the Pistons, the bad boys. And I think the Pistons would have just really took it to them. I think it would have been an ugly final. The Pistons were on a different level. He had Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars and Dennis Rodman and John Sally.
I think that was the Pistons, or was that the Blazers Bulls matchup in which Jordan went off in for like 6 threes and a half and did the shoulder shrug?
No, it was actually a Pistons Blazers.
Okay. I don't remember a Pistons Blazers final.
Yeah, it was one of those lost finals in NBA history. It was
the
Pistons.
I remember the Pistons winning two, and I remember they had to beat the Lakers to get one of them. I don't remember that one.
Yeah, it's like one of those other finals that get lost in history. But, you know, you have the Rockets Knicks. It was overshadowed by O.J. Simpson's Bronco.
I think that actually elevated that finals.
Really? See, I think it got lost because they kept cutting away, you know, during the finals.
Well, they kept cutting away, but it's always tied to that now. Like, everybody remembers OJ and the Rockets' first finals.
Yeah, but circling back to that pass, I think that pass, you know, had it not happened, I think the Spurs would have just gone and I think they would have made the finals early in their – I think they would have lost to the Pistons. The Pistons, Chuck Daly on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
The
Pistons were really good back then.
Really good. Yeah.
John Sally, Bill Laimbeer.
Yep. It would have been great, you know. But the Spurs, unfortunately, you know, saw a infamous behind-the-back pass go astray. Their season was cut short. And it was just so gut-wrenching too, James, because – they had a lead. It was 30 seconds left. 30 seconds left, and they could advance for the first time in their history to the Western Conference Finals. And it didn't happen. There were just 30 seconds left. And
behind. It really feels like it stings you a little.
Yeah, I remember watching it. I can still remember it vividly in my head, seeing that pass sail out of bounds, watching it on TV, you know, still in high school, and like, oh my God, what just happened? Just fell apart. But then you look at the positive out of, okay, well, you know, another losing season, you know, for the Spurs, you know, then what, a few years down the road, Tim Duncan came and the Spurs were able to, you know, dominate. Who knows if they were going to be able to, you know, yeah, they could have won a title early, but maybe, just maybe, they never get Tim Duncan because they were having so many winning seasons. You know, maybe that doesn't happen, but just the whole course of the franchise changed with one pass. You know, what could have been.
And Greg Popovich never steps down from being the general manager to coach the team.
Yep. Well, Bob Hill was still guiding that team, I believe.
Mm-hmm. When Bob stepped down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just happened. Oh, we got the first round. We got the first pick in the draft. No. Hey, Bob Hill, come into my office.
Step into my office.
Yeah, step into my office. Let me talk to you. Oh, wait. You let the David Robinson to an MVP season and what, a 59 or 60 win season? No, you're fired. Because we got this guy coming up right now. Yeah. By the way, he's still salty about that. Yeah, he talks about Bob Hill.
Wouldn't you be?
Hell yeah, I would. Hell yeah. Hell yes.
I mean, as long as we're talking what ifs, I mean, if you were coaching that team and have led them to the amount of success that he had, would you also not be salty at something like that?
Oh, yes, I would. I'd still be kind of grumpy about it till this day, yeah. He, I think he's coaching in China now, or Japan, or somewhere in Asia. I think that's what he's doing now. So talk about a ripple effect, huh? Talk about a what if. What if Pop never stepped as GM to be head coach? You know, Bob Hill, you know, would have had a chance to coach Tim Duncan and David Robinson, and he would have been one of the greatest coaches of all time, Bob Hill. Imagine that. Imagine that. You know, another what-if scenario that I can go back and change or just alter a bit.
Yeah.
Robinson versus Olajuwon. I would love to just talk to Robinson before. I'd be, look, I'm from the future, okay? That guy behind me with the keys to the DeLorean, that's James Pledger. He's going to be talking about you years from now. But my point is this.
go that after guy, every first.
Yes, do not bite at every pump fake. Stand your ground. And, oh, by the way, Bob Hill, you might want to send a triple team from the get-go. I would love it because Robinson was coming off that MVP season, you know, and I would tell the Spurs PR staff, you may not want to give Robinson the MVP trophy right in front of Hakeem's face because he was bitter about that and he felt that he should have won it. So don't give him that added motivation. And Bob Hill, you may want to scheme differently defensively for Robinson and maybe let Rodman try his hand first for a little bit. I mean, my goodness.
I guess the DeLorean for that, being a Rockets fan and that being my first experience of a championship, I'm not – I'm missing the day.
Yeah, you're like, you're going to accidentally hit the – set the flux capacitor for a day after that series. Like, oh, Jeff, I meant – sorry.
Sorry, Jeff.
Yeah, but that'll be another moment in Spurs history I would love to change and give it a what-if scenario because that team – yeah, I think Robinson had the MVP season. I think – correct me if I'm wrong, James. That was the same season he had the quad-double? I think it was.
Against the Clippers?
No, he had the quad double against the Pistons, Sean Elliott's Pistons.
No, yeah, it was against the Clippers. He had like 70 or something, right?
Yeah, 71, yeah. But yeah, I mean, those are a couple of moments in Spurs history I'd love to change and give it the Marvel What If series. What if Robinson didn't get eviscerated by Olajuwon? Oh my God.
Hakeem was just playing on a completely different level. It wasn't just him, he eviscerated Shaq.
Yep.
He eviscerated
Barkley, I think.
Ewing. Barkley. Oh, Ewing. Yeah. Like, yeah. Nobody could check him. Like, he was just playing on a different level in the Dream Shake. His footwork was
incredible.
Just incredible. Like, for a guy of that size to be able to move the way he moved in the post, it's mind-boggling to think about. You go back and watch some of those highlights, you don't even see footwork like that from today's big men who are extremely athletic.
Nope. I mean, no, this is not my Spurs sunglasses that I'm wearing or my eyeglasses, but I mean, maybe Duncan had some pretty good footwork in the post.
I mean, he definitely had great footwork.
Yeah. He had good post moves. You know, he would outsmart you. I think Duncan would put you in situations you don't want to be in, you know, whether it be low block, face up, you know, sees your arms hang, spiraling out, trying to defend him, and he'll put the ball in your face and, oh, get a foul, you know. But, yeah, there's I've never seen a center with that kind of moves. And they were so silky, too. They were not rigid or Frankenstein-looking. It was just elegant, and he just baffled everybody. I mean, he made Shaq, of all centers, you know, the biggest, baddest bully in the block at that time, look like a boy playing against a man, and he just destroyed him. But there was fun times in those the era of the big man. That was what Robinson, Shaq, Olajuwon, Ewing,
Barkley,
yeah,
Malone,
they had
Alonzo Mourning,
Rick Smits. It was a good time. Zoe. Good time to be alive. Yeah, so, but oh well. But hey, there's still five banners on the AT&T Center roof. Spurs fans were treated to perhaps the golden era of their franchise's history. That'd be the Big Three. And at least for a moment, they had Kawhi Leonard in a Spurs uniform and brought one title during his time in San Antonio to the Alamo City. But when we get back, go ahead.
You mentioned Kawhi and bringing a title. What if Kawhi didn't miss that free throw?
Oh, my God. You know what? He doesn't get a lot of finger pointing as he should for that.
He doesn't.
That
would have iced the game.
Yeah, one free throw. Game over. Game
over. Everybody talks about the Ray Allen shot, but everybody forgets about the Kawhi missed free throw.
Mm-hmm. Now we can go back to hating Kawhi even more now.
And you're welcome.
Another thing, Kawhi. Yeah. And another thing, you put this team in a hole, but by the way, that free throw. But hey, it is what it is, water under the bridge. But when we get back, James and I are going to continue our chat about your San Antonio Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
We're back, and I'm joined by James Pledger. He is the co-host of the Saturday Morning Hangover. Him alongside RJ Ochoa are still bringing that sports content, and I don't know how you guys are doing it right now. Still delivering the goods over there, James.
Well, it's still pretty good. Everything's not shut down. We've got the NFL free agency, things like that, the Olympics shutting down this week, what it means, Pop being committed to the team in 2021, past when he was supposed to. So there's still plenty to talk about, but the Saturday Morning Hangover is currently social distancing.
Okay.
So RJ and I are working on a way to kind of put a podcast together where we don't have to be in the same studio and whatnot, and get that onto the ESPNSA.com website. So we are still going to try and drop one a week and just kind of get through the week's stuff and our own little way. But for now, the 9 to 11 Saturday Morning Hangover Saturday mornings here on 1250 ESPN San Antonio, 94.5 FM, or ESPNSA.com. We are social distancing, so we will return when things start to return to a sense of normalcy.
Tune in. I may have a question, though. That podcast y'all record, or however you do it, it still airs during your time slot, right?
No. Because of basically the way we want to do it, where we just kind of go unabated and just like we're doing right here, we want the freedom to just kind of talk about the week, what our thoughts are, maybe take a break in between a smaller one, but not have to worry about 8 segments or whatever it may be to fill, just vent on sports for as long as we want, and then, you know, call it a day and reconvene next week and vent about that.
Well, let me ask you this, though. Maybe this is going to help add some content to your show over there with RJ. Did you happen to catch CJ McCollum's list of the most unstoppable moves that he's experienced and he's seen firsthand? And he listed Manu Ginobili's Eurostep as unstoppable. You agree with him?
Wow. Yeah. Well, I mean, Manu's Eurostep kind of revolutionized the game in a sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw multiple players, whether it's LeBron James, James Harden now, like players that have adopted Manu's Eurostep, which everybody thought was a travel at first.
Yeah, it really was. And you're looking at now, as you mentioned, it's almost like a staple now in a player's offensive arsenal. You know, even doing it, Steven Adams, you know, he did it a couple times before the season was put on hold. You know, it's devastating. It was devastating. And what was the whole thing? Remember, James, never let Mono go left, and he would always go left. Like, they would just forget about that. I don't know for how many years he went left, and defenses never really picked up on that.
Yeah. And part of it, too, was just being a lefty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he was
being
a lefty.
Being able to be a lefty, it made it that much more unguardable, because you couldn't with him, because most players aren't used to playing against lefties. There are so few of them in the league, and especially hyper-athletic lefties, to where they can get to the spots that they want any way they want, so they become so much more difficult to defend.
He also listed Iverson's crossover, Jordan's fadeaway.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Kareem's skyhook, and the guy we were talking about right now, Dream's dream shake. So those were the other unstoppable moves in CJ McCollum's opinion that, you know, he felt that were just devastating. But if I could insert one more.
I absolutely do not disagree with any of that.
Well, I don't disagree with it. But if I was allowed to insert maybe a 6th move, and tell me what you think about this, James. TD's bank shot. What do you think about that one?
I mean, sure. It's
fundamental, but it works.
It's fundamental. It works. But whether it was the bank shot or if he just drained it, it didn't matter what it was. I mean, he was just fundamentally sound with his footwork and his game. It wasn't really the move itself that was unstoppable.
Well, he would jab you, wouldn't he? He would do the jab step, usually about 2 to 3, he'll face you up and just launch it. And you knew it was going to hit that square.
Give you a jab and face up, yeah. But I know it's a lost art.
It is. It really is.
But it's also, the unstoppability of it is just so, I guess, fundamentally. It was so much Tim Duncan, and it was so boring, in a sense.
Right.
Because it was so fundamental. Like, Manu's Eurostep was innovative. The Dream Shake was innovative. The crossover was just so quick, and you couldn't,
and
you couldn't
humiliate,
tell which way he was going.
And it would humiliate defenders. I mean, how many ankles were broken by Iverson? Countless.
Jordan's
fadeaway too. You know.
No. Jordan's ankles were broke by Iverson once.
Oh, right. Yeah, Jordan's got his ankles broken a couple times by AI, but. Yeah, they're all exciting. Every move was exciting. You know, when you know Kareem was, you know, facing up at the basket, moving lateral towards it, you know, with his arm kind of hanging low with the ball coming. And even didn't Magic Johnson even try his hand on it too, and it worked.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where I looked at it, and as a kid growing up playing basketball, I would work so much on Jordan's turnaround, the fadeaway, the ability to spin, create the separation by fading backwards and still get a good look off at the shot. Like, between that, the Dream Shake where you get under the rim, show the ball, come back around and just put it in. Like, these were staples of growing up. Like, how many people jab stepped and shot it off the backboard?
Right.
Growing up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Can't fault CJ for throwing Manu's Euro on his list. And he was on the receiving end of a few of those before Manu
it's
retired.
So greedy. You already have one spur. You wanted another.
I do, man. I do. I think TD gets lost in that whole GOAT conversation sometimes.
I don't.
I know you don't, but
I'm pretty widely. I think he's pretty widely regarded as the greatest power forward ever to play the game.
But when it comes to listing players regardless of position, you know that's tough where to slot him. You know,
how many power forwards do you ever see get mentioned? Period. When you're talking about just greatest players ever,
mainly guards.
Guards
and centers. Yeah. Although he was a center for a good chunk of his career.
No, that was Rosho and Oberto. And
remember that guy? Nazi Muhammad. What a title with the Spurs, too.
And who's the one doing GM work now? Malik Rose.
Oh, Malik Rose, yeah. By the way, very underrated facial on Mutombo. During the Spurs Nets finals, that was just brutal what he did to Mutombo. Brutal.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of like 90s centers that we'd forgot, you know, we were listing them all off. Mutombo.
Yeah, Mutombo, Mount Mutombo, man, wagging that finger when he got you. Although Jordan got him back a couple times. That was funny to see, wagging the finger at him when he dunked on him. Mutombo was a good sport about it.
No greater dunk on a center by a guard than Jordan just eviscerating Ewing in the Eastern Conference Finals that one year.
He had a lot of disrespect.
He and Scottie Pippen just put one on Ewing that just made you cringe.
you felt for Ewing, you know, when Scottie stepped on him, you're like, oh my God, the disrespect. But man, hey, that's when the NBA was a little bit, how can I say this, a little less?
Grittier?
Well, yeah, it was a lot grittier. And maybe things were allowed more back then. What was it? A technical foul back then? You have to draw blood. I think that was the only way you got a tech on the court. There's no blood. It's a common foul. That's how it was.
Now you
back
can get
then.
One for laughing on the bench.
Yeah. Tim Duncan was all about that. But good times though. But now that this show has gone completely off the rails, James, one more time, tell everybody they can listen to you and RJ and all about the Saturday Morning Hangover.
Well, currently we're just going to podcast some stuff and put it on the ESPN San Antonio website at espnsa.com. But normally once everything starts to get back and resume a sense of normalcy, you'll hear us Saturday mornings 9 to 11 here on 1250 ESPN San Antonio, 94.5 FM, or you can listen online at ESPNSA.com. Plus, we always, once we're done with the show, put it in the audio vault there in the listen tab on ESPNSA.com.
And, of course, the Blitz with Rob and Jason, that's still going strong, right?
That's still going strong, so I'm still helping produce that every day as they are WFHing.
What's that?
Work from home, baby.
Oh.
Hashtag WFH.
I love that. It's going to be weird when that doesn't exist anymore and everybody's able to go back to work.
You know what? I think we're getting to a point where people just can't wait to go back to work.
Yeah, I think so too. I agree with you. All right. But hey, better be safe than sorry. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff G Spurs Zone. Subscribe to Locked On Spurs wherever you get your favorite podcast. And of course, visit the Spurs Zone from, again, what CJ had to say about Manu Ginobili Zero to what's the latest as far as the COVID-19 virus impacting the Spurs directly and indirectly. We kind of alluded to it earlier in the show. The Olympics been postponed. Thus, Popovich's Olympic debut has been postponed as well. So you're seeing so much how this virus is impacting the sports world and your Spurs. Even Marco Bellinelli, you know, I get he's been a whipping boy for the Spurs fans for all season, but right now he's really dealing with seeing his country getting ravaged right now by that virus and what he has to say about helping out his home country. It's all there at the Spurs Zone. But for James Pledger, I am Jeff Garcia, and he and I, we're going to put a lock on this episode of Locked On Spurs.